Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Today we're going to be speaking with two great guests. First one is Joan Dolan. She's the Director of Apprenticeship and Strategic Partnership at the Maine Department of Labor. And Julie Rabinowitz, who has been a great guest on the show before, Director of Communication and Operations, again, for the Maine Department of Labor.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing? Great. Today we're going to be talking about workforce development and training opportunities. That sounds like fun.
It can be really fun.
Yeah, of course it can.
It's a lot of what we're doing.
That's right. Well, I mean, look, a lot of times employers say, you know, I just don't have the right people. I just don't, can't find the right talent. I can't, I go out there, I look for it. I put my advertising up on jobs at ME or some sort of job board, and I'm just not finding great talent. We hear it every day. No question about it.
We hear it,
right?
At the department.
True. Every time. Look, we do it at CMA, we do executive search, and we get calls down more than ever looking for talent. And a lot of times, unfortunately, we have to go out of state to get that talent. Let's just be real.
But that's okay.
That's okay. We'll bring him here.
To move here because of our labor shortage.
But we're talking about growing the talent within.
Yes.
To within our organization. So, Joan, tell me a little bit about how this workforce development program works.
Well, there's a number of workforce development programs in Maine. Primarily what we do is we receive grant funds from the federal government, and we also have some state general funds. And what those funds can be used for is to train entry-level workers primarily, because those funds are income eligible dependent, so a person has to have a level of income that meets the guidelines of the funding streams that are coming in.
So there's a bunch of different programs, so let's break that down, okay?
Right.
So let's start with one. What is the biggest development program we currently have in the state?
Well, I don't know that there is a biggest development program in the state. There's a number of different funding streams, but really what we don't want employers to worry about where the money is coming from. Just know that we have money in the state right now, both from federal funding streams and also from state general funds that can help to fill your workforce needs.
So what can those funds pay for?
Those funds can pay for training. Those funds can, some of them can be used to offset the costs of childcare, transportation. A lot of times people who are out of work and don't have any income streams coming in, one of their big barriers to actually getting the training that they need to move forward in the workplace is that they don't have any way to take care of their children or any way to get to the training or to their job. And so it's what we put into the bigger bucket called support services. So for people that are really looking to get into the workforce, we can provide some assistance beyond just the tuition costs. We can also offset the cost of salary, up to 50% the cost of salary for typically 1 to 3 months for a new hire that qualifies. It's called OJT, which is short for on-the-job training. And as long as the person has a really defined group of skills that they're going to be learning on the job and they meet the income qualifications for the program, we can help offset the extraordinary costs of onboarding a new employee.
So, Julie, what are some of the requirements that employers have to look at to become eligible for this?
Well, first, they have to contact us, and that's really the gateway to us helping look at where you fit in. And what we're doing now is really trying to group employers together by skill sets and industry needs. So we're forming industry partnerships, and we call these things sector strategies. So by contacting us, it may be that you have a one-off kind of training need, but it may be that we can group you with other similar employers or employers who are hiring similar skill sets. So in manufacturing or in healthcare, and then we can do larger recruitments to identify pools of workers and pre-qualify them. So what we need to know are, what are your skill sets that you need? What are your job requirements in terms of, are there issues that you have to do in kind of a pre-employment checklist? Do you need background checks? Do you need to have drug testing? Those kinds of things is for applicant screening. And then we can work with that group of employers either statewide, regionally, locally, and make that connection. And it doesn't have, you can call the Department of Labor or you can call your local career center, and that's kind of the first gateway to getting into this program.
Is there a difference, Joan, between state funds being used and federal funds being used? Does it matter?
No, it really doesn't matter. And one of the things that I'm very passionate about is bringing people together that can meet the employer's needs. So an employer calls and says, I need 15 widget makers and I don't have any widget makers. Okay, well, what do your widget makers need to know to be able to make a widget? And is there anybody that's providing the training for that widget making process? And if the answer is no, we don't know, that's where we'll call a community college or perhaps the adult education provider, and pull those people into the conversation and develop the training in collaboration with them to meet the employer needs. And a lot of times the workforce funding can be used to help offset the cost of that training. Community colleges also come with quality centers that will develop training for employers. And so that's really how we do it. We try to get everybody sitting at the table, everybody that's important to be solving the problem, sitting at the table together and coming up with the solutions.
So you'll actually work with some sort of training organization to create a program that partners with that employer to fill the need.
That's correct. And
okay.
And I have an example of that.
Sure.
And we have a job-driven national emergency grant in our state. That's been here for about a year. It's a two-year grant. And what that grant does is it's a federal grant. We're to partner with businesses to do exactly what I just described, figure out what they need. And what we're hearing from businesses everywhere we go is that our entry-level workforce and even our mid-level workforce is not coming with the work skills that they need to know to be successful in the workplace. It's not even the technical skills that employers are crying for. It seems that it's the soft skills. It's the employability skills. Show up for work on time. Don't use your cell phone while you're supposed to be doing your job. You know, all of those kind of things. How to play what I call nice in the sandbox with your coworkers. And so we have partnered with adult education to do an employability, what we're calling ready to work. It's taking their standard work ready curriculum that they've had in the state for many years, and it leads to a certificate, and we're tweaking it to be specific to an employer's needs. So we've piloted a work ready program in healthcare 3 times now, and we're starting to replicate that out again. And at this point, it's primarily for certified nursing assistants or CNAs, which we seem to have a big shortage of in our state right now. And so we said, okay, we're going to do the pre-screening with these folks, and then the next step is they're going to go into an employability skills training. And if they make it through that, then we'll start with the CNA training. And partway through the CNA training, we're taking, and the employer is actually hiring these folks, but we're hiring them into an OJT. So the grant funds are being used to pay 50% of the person's salary while they finish up their CNA training. So it's offsetting the cost to the employer. So the employer is paying the salary at a lower level than what they would pay starting CNA, but they're doing that for 4 weeks while they finish up their clinicals. Once they become a CNA, they get a pay raise, and then we continue the OJT for another month. So it's really a wash in the cost for the employer, but hopefully by going through a more extensive process where the person really understands what they're getting into before they get into it, and while we are trying to teach them some, you know, work skills, work habits, if you will, or soft skills. We're sort of pulling it all the way through. And I'm also very passionate about making career pathways for these individuals, because I think one of the reasons that we have a hard time hiring entry-level employees sometimes is because we're not necessarily identifying what is the career pathway beyond becoming, say, a CNA, and working with employers to develop those career pathways for them as well.
We're talking with Julia Rabinowitz and Joan Dolan from the Maine Department of Labor. We're talking about workforce development and training opportunities. Julie, tell me a little bit about, is this the same as other states do outside of Maine? Is this something unique for Maine in terms of what the Department of Labor is working?
No, actually, this is best practices of other states that we're bringing here to Maine. And we have been focused on this, I would say, for the past 5 or so years, more intensively than ever before. And what we want to have in this state is what we see working successfully in states like Pennsylvania and Connecticut, Washington State, and many others, is that industry works with the training providers, that we have these sector strategies in healthcare, in manufacturing, in automotive tech. It could be any industry. It doesn't have to be just manual labor. It can be in IT. It can be commercial truck driving. There's all kinds of applications for this, but the industry is saying what our needs are, and they're saying what the curriculum needs to be. In these work-ready programs, they're really excellent models where not only are you learning the soft skills, but you also learn some of the vocabulary so that the when you move on to the next level of training where you're actually learning the occupational skill, it's not foreign. And we're doing the assessment up front so that we match the right candidates who will have the aptitude for the training. We're moving away from the train and pray model where we spend the money on training and we train you on what you wanted to train in and we hope that there's a job out there. Now we're matching your skills and interests with the jobs that employers have, and we're doing that up front, and we're making sure you're employable before we invest taxpayer money on your training. But we also are making sure that you have the opportunity to get a job after you get the training so that you can move forward in your career.
So I'm going to get back to employee part in about a second, but I just have a question in regards to employers. What employers should be thinking about this? Because the question then comes, is it any position? Is it what is really the areas of opportunity for this type of work? Because one of the things I think about is any type of industry might have an issue with soft skills. That's a pretty broad statement, right, in terms of, heck, I know people that are dealing with soft skill issues. Mm-hmm. So the question is there certain industries that should think about this more often than not, or is it across the board?
I believe it's across the board, but we don't typically spend workforce dollars just to deliver soft skill training. It really needs to be paired with some sort of a technical skill, whether it's, you know, becoming a CNA, becoming a truck driver, becoming an entry-level technician in a manufacturing plant.
So this is more geared towards manufacturing, transportation?
Not necessarily.
So it can be for a white-collar environment?
It can be for a white-collar environment.
So an example of that might be?
Information technology. We're really starting to dip our toes into developing workforce development programs for information technology. We need to develop some IT folks here in Maine, or else our IT companies are going to go someplace besides Maine. So we recently applied for a federal apprenticeship training grant, and very interested in developing apprenticeship programs in the information technology industry. We've partnered with Educate Maine and Maine is IT, who has some great connections with a number of information technology employers in Maine, and they're all on board with developing apprenticeship programs in that industry.
Okay. So, you know, when I really think about this, it does absolutely transfer into other areas, because initially when I was thinking about this program, I thought it might be mostly in the manufacturing area or mostly in that, but it does seem to be more broad range. Julie, when employers really contact the office, what exactly is the process they're going to go through?
Well, they're going to talk to Joan or some of our other staff, or they'll talk to their local career center manager and have a conversation about what are the skill sets they need and the positions that they're having a hard time filling. We are supplementing some of that work with our job vacancy survey at the state level, trying to identify what are those consistently hard to fill jobs and matching that up with the work that we're doing on the workforce development side. But we need to have that conversation, and it may be that we refer you or have follow-up conversations with your trade association or your professional association, because there may be a greater need. We may connect with other regions of the state that have a similar pool of employers in their geographic locality and identify what training programs are out there. So it initially starts with conversations. Joan can speak more about what happens in the actual follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Well, what typically happens is we want to make it so that there's no wrong door. We want to make it so that an employer gets in touch with either directly with the Maine Department of Labor in Augusta, or they go to a career center or to a local workforce investment board and say, I have a need. I have a need for this type of employee. I cannot find them. How can you help me? And we're really trying to work together. They might even go to the community college and say, I have a need to have this specialized training developed. And we're really, part of my role is to try to make the connections so that everybody understands, everybody in the workforce development realm understands who are the players that need to be at the table to effectively meet that employer's needs. Trying to get away from our siloed thinking and really trying to pull together the people that can help create the solutions.
We're talking with Julie Rabinowitz and Joan Dolan from the Maine Department of Labor. We're talking about workforce development and training opportunities. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking with Julie Rabinowitz, Director of Communication and Operations from the Maine Department of Labor, and Joan Dolan, Director of Apprenticeship and Strategic Partnership, again, at the Maine Department of Labor. Big titles, but great people.
Okay?
And we're talking about workforce development and training opportunities here in the great state of Maine. You know, in the first section, we talked a lot about how employers and what the programs are about, okay? And we're going to get into some more detail in the system. But what I really want to talk about right now is what are the type of employees that mm-hmm. employers can think about getting right from this program? So I'll throw out some things. Are they going to have to be unemployed? Are they going to have to be people who are on the poverty level? Are they going to have to be? What are some of the criteria or background behind that? And, you know, from that aspect, I want to kind of see what exactly, the employees are going to think about getting.
Mm-hmm. Well, people can come from a variety of places. We have many dislocated workers in Maine, people that have lost their jobs due to no fault of their own. Oftentimes, we have older folks who are, have been employed for many, many, many years. There are a lot of older folks here in Maine.
Yes.
And need some reskill training. So when you think about unemployed people, it's really important not to think about, I don't want to go there, because you do want to go there. You need to go there because those are the folks who need your jobs. For a lot of our workforce funding streams, it is income dependent. So it's poverty level type people that are income eligible for our competitive skills scholarship program. It's 200% of poverty level. So for a single person, that's about $23,000 a year, which, you know, that's pretty typical income in Maine for a single person. Our income levels are based on family. So you could have a single mom or a single dad with one, two, or three kids, and suddenly they're income eligible because of the size of their family. Some of the programs don't depend on income level at all. So apprenticeship is one of those programs. So apprenticeship is a good program to advance people that are at a mid-level in your workforce to a higher level, higher performing status.
So there are a lot of different people that can be trained on these grants. It's not just one particular area, correct?
That's correct. And I think that, you know, it's important to know that we can work with some of your incumbent employees. They would have to be sort of your entry-level employees to advance their skills. So if they needed additional training that would result in a certificate or an industry-recognized credential or an apprenticeship certificate, they may be eligible for some of our funding, which could provide up to $6,000 a year in offsetting the costs of tuition and child care and support services for that individual.
And wages.
So when the individual comes in, you had mentioned, Julie, that they would be assessed, right? These individuals will be assessed. Talk a little bit about what that means.
Well, I think that what we're looking at is trying to identify what the knowledge, skills, and abilities are of that person, and do they have the aptitude for the program that they're interested in, and then also what they would qualify for. So right now when we're doing some recruitments for the CNA work Ready to Work programs, we're doing large, you know, email blasts and connecting with people who are on unemployment, connecting with people who might have registered on the job bank to attend a job fair, people who might have registered at a career center for a job search workshop or a resume workshop. And we're bringing them all in and then sitting down with each one to identify what programs they qualify for. And some qualify for the CSSP program. Some may qualify for an apprenticeship program, but also seeing what their interests are. And then we work with the employers to kind of pre-qualify them. Joan can speak to the pre-qualification process.
So what is that process specifically?
Well, we work with the employer to figure out what they need, and we can't actually assess the individual. The employer has to do that, but if we can pre-screen them. So if the employer says, you know, I can't take anybody with a criminal history, I can't, you know, I need somebody to be able to lift 50 pounds. I mean, but those are real specific employer questions that the employer really needs to.
So the employer is still going to interview the person.
Absolutely.
They're still going to hire the person and make sure that it fits properly.
Right. It's not a forced hire.
No. Good point, because that is a question.
Right.
Sometimes they go, well,
right,
you have to take this candidate, well, you don't get the funds, right?
Right.
So
no. And we're trying to make it so that the employer is engaged up front, and we avoid spending the money and having them not be qualified for the job, but also, on the other hand, having an employer feel like they got sent a candidate who doesn't really fit.
The question really is, you know, if this person had the technical skills that you require for the job that you're hiring for, would this candidate meet your needs? You know, if they're successful in completing whatever training program it is, you know, would you interview them and potentially hire them? If the employer says yes, then we move forward. If the employer says no, then we find another avenue for that person to go down.
So when the employers contact you and they're saying, hey, we have this need, and we now you say, well, we have some people that might match with that, right? And so the employer says, okay, we'll hire them, we'll bring them in, we'll start them. Is it a reimbursement program? In other words, they have to pay the employee and they get reimbursed. How does the funding happen, the funding mechanism? So does the employer have to take that up front? Is there a time frame they must work for at least 3, 6, 9 months, 12 months? You know, how does that work in terms of, do you have to be locked in? Because obviously if you're getting funds from, you know, the feds or the state, lack of a better word, what are the strings that are attached to this?
It is a reimbursement for the employers. It's actually, if it were entering into an OJT or an on-the-job training contract, it's a contract, formal contract, and the terms of payment and everything else will be laid out with the employer at that time.
Okay, so it is a reimbursement program. Do they have to work a certain amount of time? Let's say the employee starts and after 3-4 weeks we realize it's not the right fit.
Then we stop reimbursing.
Okay, but
that's
we
all.
Would
we stop
at that
reimbursing
point.
Okay. For that employee. I mean, it's so the employer pays the employee and then submits the documentation.
So the contract doesn't interfere with the hiring part of it.
No, okay. I mean, the employer hires who they want and they keep hired who they want. I mean, but the person is an employee of the employer once we enter into that contract.
Okay, great. And so they can do this for up to a year, you said, right? The program can be up to a year or?
No, usually an OJT, it can be up to 6 months, but typically they're a month to 3 months long where the reimbursement is the 50% reimbursement because it's really just to offset the extraordinary costs of hiring on somebody. So mostly our monies are available to offset the costs of training, not necessarily and not typically the costs of wages.
So when there's a training program available at a local community college, for example, and they go and they take that training, and that training is typically 8, 12 weeks, I'm not sure the time frame, but let's use that as an assumption, the college would they get reimbursed? It doesn't go through the employer to the college, or how does that funding work for the training side?
It typically would go to the employer because typically the employer would be paying for that up front, or it could go to the employee, you know, if they're paying. It all depends who's paying for the training.
Oh, so employees could also pay for the training to get that training.
They could. You know, it's not typically how it works, but it's possible. I mean, it's all very individualized, and it's, you know,
nothing's carved in stone. That's great. I mean, I love that there are many options.
There's many
options. I didn't realize that.
Right, and I think that that's been our difficulty at the department is that because it can be so individualized, and we can have individual OJTs, or we can have groups of individuals, or we can have these larger ready-to-work programs, that it's hard to educate an employer about all the options that are available to them, and particularly if they're not coming to us saying, we're having a hard time finding skilled workers. We usually get the complaints when they're frustrated, and then we've got to kind of bring them into the fold and say, well, here are the options we have available. But rather than going and telling everybody else in town, come to us and tell us, and we can actually identify what we have available to solve that problem.
Well, and every employer is different, so it's really important to develop a, you know, it might be simpler to say, well, this is exactly how it works, boom, 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 but I don't think that would work very well for employers, so it's nice that we can have different things.
No, I think it's great. Resources. I mean, that's the part that I was not aware of. I thought mm-hmm. it was a very set program, right, so that you'd have to come in and this is the way it works, and this is the process. To be able to customize does expand the availability.
To meet the needs.
To meet the needs.
Right.
That's great in terms of that.
And there are some, you know, apprenticeship does have some, say, requirements in terms it has to have a hands-on component. It has to have a classroom-based component. That could be a year to 2 years of training.
Year to 5 years, actually.
Yeah, five. So there you go. But it still has customizability within it as long as those other parameters are being met. So, but even with apprenticeship, people think of it as only for the trades, and we're trying to expand that idea that apprenticeship can be used for healthcare, it could be used for IT, it can be used for automotive mechanics or other kinds of technical things where you have a hands-on component, veterinary techs. There's a lot of occupations that would be appropriate for apprenticeship. We just need to think outside the box and help employers think outside the box.
Joan, give me an example, if you could, about a successful apprenticeship program, whether you use the company name or not, doesn't matter. But give me an example of one that has, maybe over the course of the last year or two, really worked, and you say this is the model of how it could really work for a company.
Mm-hmm. I think that we've developed an apprenticeship program in healthcare for nurses. So we take a registered nurse and move them from help fill the gap between education and practice. When nurses graduate from nursing school, they still need a lot of support and a lot of hand-holding, if you will, to be fully effective in their roles. I had one employer tell me it takes 3 years to onboard fully a new nurse from the time they graduate from college to the time they're fully effective on the floor as a nurse is 3 years. That sounds like an apprenticeship to me. And so we've developed an apprenticeship program for new nurses. It's 1 year long. And it's a we're calling it a nurse residency program, and taking that new grad nurse and really supporting them with what in the hospital sense they call them preceptors, but we would call it like a mentor for a full year, and providing them with the related instruction. What we call the related instruction has to be at least 144 hours of additional classroom time in addition to the very well-defined skills that they're learning on the job. So the on-the-job learning has to be for a year at least, and then the related technical instruction is 144 hours. So we're providing those new grad nurses with that much additional education to help speed up that process of making them fully functional on the floor. We're also taking nurses and training them in specialty areas, critical care, emergency room care. The possibilities are really endless. And again, it's that they need additional training to be really good in the specialty area that they've chosen within the hospital. With everything is becoming so much more technical and specialized that, just because you went to school to be a Y doesn't mean you're going to be a successful Y in the workplace. You've got to have a continuous learning going on for the rest of your work life.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, today more than ever, IT is changing faster and faster, and the technological side. No matter what age, even within the last 2 years, whatever you had for a computer, heck, you buy a computer, it's obsolete the minute you get it. I mean, that's just the reality of how it is today. And so a lot of the manufacturing, a lot of the medical centers are doing a lot of IT upgrades because they have to. They don't have a choice. And that's part of the training and development that goes along.
Right. And when you do those upgrades, everyone's going to be trained on the new systems and understand its capabilities to make it most productive and effective in the workplace.
So some of the initiatives that we're working on in groups of sector partnerships, which is groups of employers, is a wastewater treatment plant operator. We're working on also boiler makers, HVAC boiler tenders, also working on automotive technician. One of our first, we used to have automotive technicians registered as apprentices in our state, but we don't have any currently. And so I'm working with one employer to get it started, and we're going to connect with the career and technical education schools at the high school level to develop pre-apprenticeships that will lead the individuals directly into apprenticeship, and I'm hoping to work with the Maine Auto Dealers Association to spread that statewide. So really starting out in areas that we think are promising that will fill the needs of multiple employers in our state and get the word out there through the associations and through employers connecting to employers and saying, hey, try this out. This works.
It does sound like you're using associations as a big communications venue, right?
Right, we call them the convener. They're the natural convener of a group that needs certain skill sets and can advocate for them. And that, in the words of the bureaucracy around this, the trusted intermediary. But you need someone that the employers are going to trust, because, frankly, they don't always trust the Department of Labor, because we have other enforcement and kinds of things that we do. So it's good to have a group that's out there that's advocating for the employers and that knows what the industry standards are.
We're talking with Julia Rabinowitz and Joan Dolan from the Maine Department of Labor about workforce development and training opportunities. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today, again, we're talking with Julie Rabinowitz, Director of Communication and Operations, and Joan Dolan, Director of Apprenticeship and Strategic Partnerships, both from the Maine Department of Labor, and we're talking about workforce development and training opportunities. Does your organization have a need? That's the question you need to ask yourself today. Do you have a need and you want to hire and you want to train? You want to get some help doing that? That's what we're talking about today. And you can call Joan, call Julie, call anyone at the Department of Labor, and we'll make that happen.
Walk in your local career center.
Walk in the career center. Make it happen. All right. You know, we were talking during the break about truck drivers, and, you know, some people will roll their eyes, but look, truck drivers make incredibly good money. And yes, you're on the road a lot if you like to drive. But there is an epidemic in the country about, last I heard, about 100,000 trucks just sitting there, and they're using trains because they can't find enough truck drivers. And you were talking about some of the new program that's coming out. So, Joan, if you could explain that, because there might be people listening going, well, that might be for me.
Okay. That what's happening is that I had the career center managers in Aroostook in Washington County contact me and say, we have a huge need for truck drivers up here. Is there any way we can use competitive skills scholarship funds for businesses that need to hire truck drivers? And I said, well, let's think about that. And we pulled together and said, yep, we can do that. So through the Career Center, they recruited for people that wanted to become truck drivers. You know, are they going to meet the drug-free criteria for truck drivers? Do they have the academic capabilities to get through the course? And so we did a CSSP business, Competitive Skills Scholarship Program, directly for the business. So we recruited the individuals in, screened them, determined which ones were going to move forward with the training. They went to truck driver training right now. This is actually unfolding as I speak. Went to the truck driver training class. We were able to pay for that class. When they get out of that, the employers will interview them, hire the people that they feel they want to bring on board, and then we will hire them into an OJT, on the job training program, so we can offset the costs of a seasoned truck driver riding with that new hire truck driver for a period of up to 3 months is really what we're looking at. And so it will hopefully reduce some of the insurance costs, which is, you know, truck companies have a hard time hiring brand new CDL licensed folks because their insurance costs go way up. And we're hoping that by doing this, it'll help reduce the employer's costs, and it will anyway. If you've got, you know, somebody, if we're paying half the cost of a brand new hire, it will.
No, that's a huge, huge advantage, right, for employers in terms of being able to find that. And, you know, it's not just large employers that need truck drivers. Oil companies. Small, companies.
Truck drivers are everywhere.
They're everywhere. And I think sometimes people think, oh, that's just the big rigs that are out there. It's for other areas, too.
Right. It's for moving. I mean, we're hearing ads on the radio all the time for all kinds of different occupations. And every time I hear them, I think, oh, we could help you find those workers, because we have the ability to and the flexibility to train for all these different kinds of jobs. And when you think of all of the HR costs that the staff of the department through these programs are going to offset, the recruitment, identification of candidates, the pre-screening. We are really partnering with businesses and trying to be be the eyes and ears to find candidates.
And the link.
And the link to the training, and to pay for a lot of this through the state and federal funds, and then to be able to offset the costs of onboarding when we're paying for some of this OJT. It's a tremendous investment on the part of the state, but we need these people to work because we have a labor shortage, and we want these people to be taxpayers and have good wages and a career with a future. So it's a great investment from the state's perspective and from the LePage administration's perspective, but it's also, I think, a real good benefit for all of these businesses, and we just need to increase the awareness of these opportunities.
You talked about, you said that, you know, you heard the radio ad and you're saying, oh, we can help them. Can the state reach out on this, or does it have to be incoming? In other words, can, if you hear that ad, can the Department of Labor call that organization, or does the organization have to call the state?
We do some outreach if we know. It's always easier if you call us, because there's a lot more employers out there, and not all of them are advertising for help on the radio.
Oh, no question.
But we do have the main job bank, which is free for employers to post jobs on, and then use our career centers for recruiting. So we have a lot of tools that are available to help employers identify candidates separate and apart from the training piece. I think where the real value add comes is when you need workers with specific skills that you want to have as long-term employees and be there for a career. We can really establish the groundwork for that and both work with you for new hires and for moving up some of those entry-level incumbents.
So in one of the ways that we do that, we refer that as upskill backfill. So what we would love to do is come in and develop an apprenticeship program or a CSSP business program for some of your entry-level people, upskill them to the next level within your organization, and then backfill them with the people that are dislocated workers or unemployed individuals and eligible for the Workforce Investment Act or Workforce Opportunity Act, other workforce dollars, whatever workforce dollars, to get those people that are jobless into jobs, and will help you also move your entry-level workers up to that mid-level.
No, it's a win-win across the board, right? I mean, it's a win-win across the board in terms of that. No question about it. All right, so let's get a little bit into a little bit detail about the different state and federal programs. We already talked a little bit about the apprenticeship, which is funded by the general fund. That's a state program. I believe there's another one called the CSSP, the Competitive Skills Scholarship Program, right?
Yes,
we talked a little bit about that. Tell me a little bit about that part of it.
Okay, so the Competitive Skills Scholarship Program is a program that is funded by 0.01% of the unemployment insurance taxes received from employers on an annual basis. The fund is infused with approximately $3 million a year, and it is to be used to take people who do not have post-secondary certificates or degrees and to identify them, and they have to be income eligible, so they have to be 200% of poverty, and that's the $23,000 or so for a single person, and it's based on your family income. And traditionally, we have enrolled individuals into that, into what I refer to as the train and pray model. So we're training them in. We're saying, okay, here's a list of the high-demand, high-wage occupations in the state. If you want to train for one of these things on this list and you meet the eligibility criteria, we'll enroll you, we'll, you know, pay for you, pay for your child care, pay for your transportation, pay your tuition, up to $6,000 a year for up to 5 years to go to school and get that degree. What we're moving it now, so we still have that train and pray model that's rolled out, and it's an ongoing application process. Now we're moving into the what we're calling CSSP business. So if a business comes to us and says, I have these entry-level employees and they're really great and I would like to, you know, get them this industry-recognized certificate, or I really need them to have a bachelor's degree or whatever it is, you know, what is that next step? If that employee is income eligible for CSSP and you have a need that you've identified, we will enroll that person in CSSP and pay for the cost of their education, to you can advance them. So it might, you know, CSSP might not pay for everything that the person needs, or if the employer has a tuition reimbursement plan at their business, we can
supplement
it with that.
Sure.
But, you know, $6,000 a year at a community college or even in our university system goes quite a long way.
Absolutely. On the federal side, we have the JDNEG and the SPNEG. Say that 10 times
fast. It's the Fed's alphabet soup.
Yes, it's federal alphabet soup as opposed to the MDOL alphabet soup.
And we're talking about it ASAP.
Yes.
So what's the difference? What is the JD versus the SP?
The JDNEG is a grant that's been in the state for approximately a year. It's the job-driven national emergency grant. It is targeted for long-term unemployed people. So long-term unemployed is defined by the federal government as somebody who's been out of work for 26 weeks or more, so 6 months or more. We can also train just regular dislocated workers with those funds. We are training about 400 folks with that. That grant is, a lot of those monies have been used to start up the ready-to-work workforce academies that we've been talking about. And then the SPNEG, we just got notification that grant came into the state on July 1st of 2015, and that is the sector partnership national emergency grant, and that grant is again going to be targeted towards funding long-term unemployed and dislocated workers, but it also has some money in there to develop regional plans and also to provide some outreach to employers.
That's where we really need to. We're knocking on employers' doors, but we don't want to do it individually. So shows like yours are great because we can talk about it and reach a larger audience. But we also want to continue to develop those partnership networks, using those trades associations, using local chambers of commerce as vehicles for getting the word out, and then convening those groups to come together. One of the reasons why we have such energy and a lot of programs in the healthcare sector is that they had a healthcare forum that brought all those players to the table, not just the hospitals, but nursing homes and a lot of other healthcare employers. And we want to do that for other sectors where there's similar skill sets. So the Manufacturing Association is going to be a natural intermediary for manufacturing, but there's a lot of other sectors that are hiring certain skills or that are across industries, finance, IT in particular, where multiple employers from a broad range of industries need to hire individuals with those skills.
And we had to identify our primary industries of focus in applying for those grant funds. And the three industries are healthcare, precision manufacturing, and information technology. And that's not to say that we won't be able to use the funding for some other industry groups that are identified on a regional basis. But those really seem to be the big three in our state
in terms
that,
of the need
that cross all counties and have a large need.
Great. We're talking with Julie Rabinowitz and Joan Dolan from the Maine Department of Labor about workforce development and training opportunities. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB and presented by CMAKorea.com. And today we've had a great discussion with Julie Rabinowitz and Joan Dolan, both from the Maine Department of Labor, talking about workforce development and training opportunities. And I got to tell you, one of the things that I don't think is known out there to both of you, seriously, is the fact that this program really exists and is as expansive
yes.
as it is in terms of what it covers. I'm in the industry of knowing about training and development, and I was not aware it was that expansive. So that's really something that the communication needs to be out there.
Well, and we appreciate the opportunity to talk about it here, and we really need that word of mouth to spread, and we're going to continue to do work around informing our partners out there. The best way to find out about what the department has on the table for training opportunities in your area is to talk to your local career center manager. We have 12 career centers throughout the state, and we range from the York County Career Center, which is headquartered in Springvale, to the Greater Portland, at the new Greater Portland Career Center over by the Jetport, as well as Lewiston, Brunswick, Rockland, Augusta, Wilton, Skowhegan, Presque Isle, Bangor, Machias, and Calais. So we're in almost every county. Your manager is going to know the needs locally. What kind of can't they're going to know the avenues that we have for recruitment. They can hook you up with the job bank. All of these services are paid for by your taxes, so there's no additional cost to participating in these programs.
No, I think that's a huge, and companies say all the time, we don't have a lot of money for training. Well, that's probably true. I mean, the economy has certainly made it challenging. But here's an area of, you've already paid your taxes, let's get some money back.
Get the money back. Right.
Get the money back and use it.
And the last thing we want to do is get this money from the federal government and not be able to train enough people for jobs in an environment where we know that we need every worker we can in the state of Maine, because within the next 15 to 20 years, our workforce is going to shrink by 100,000. We're going to lose 100,000 workers as the baby boomers retire, and that we don't have the young people to replace them. So we need to get these people trained and into good jobs that pay great wages.
Julie, what's a website that somebody can go to?
MaineCareerCenter.com, and that'll be the gateway to the career centers. You can also go to maine.gov/labor and click on employment and training, and we'll get you there as well.
Julie and Joan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
We appreciate it very much. Again, talking about workforce development and training opportunities, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. And now your HR tip of the week. According to TrendHR.com, here are some tips for minimizing conflict in the workplace. Never assume situations will resolve themselves. Train managers in conflict resolution techniques. Remember to access employees' conflicts from the perspective of each individual involved. Have a clear process for investigating complaints and be consistent as possible in following that process. Communicate clearly and often. And finally, set clear expectations as to what behaviors will not be tolerated in the workforce and enforce those expectations. And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, our guest is Giovanni Twigg. He's the Chief HR Officer at IDEX Laboratories. We're going to talk about HR roles in business, why HR needs to have a seat at the table, and what it takes to lean in to make that happen. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.
If you'd like to be a guest on the HR Power Hour or be a show sponsor, send David an email today at info@hrpowerhour.com.